Hey, everybody, welcome. And thank you for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. My name is Zach Brittle. I'm here with Laura Heck. Today, we're here with Charisse Cook. Charisse is out of London, England. She actually lives very close to Ted Lasso. And she's here to talk to us about attachment. Really cool conversation. We learned a lot about the different styles and how they show up in our offices and how to apply them. I am fascinated by attachment theory, and I'm always trying to learn more. I think you will benefit from hearing her perspectives. This is a very cool conversation. Stick around. Charisse, where are you? Where are you?
Yeah. I'm in London, in England. Well, actually, just outside London, in a place called Richmond. Don't know if you're any Ted Lasso fans. That's where I am.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Do you ever see him around? Do you see Ted walking around the town
We've
at all?
Seen some of the filming take place, which is quite fun. And whenever we watch, we recognize all the places. But no, we haven't been having drinks or anything.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
I have a really important question for you.
Is it about Ted Lasso? Because if it's not about Ted Lasso, I want to talk about Ted Lasso just a little bit longer.
It's about Indian food.
Okay, but can I?
So I will be in.
Can I go first? Just let me go first. Fine.
By the way, Charisse, we are married, not to each other. So we have a bit of a brother-sister dynamic. We definitely talk over each other. And we bicker like any couple would, really, or sibling, but me first. If I'm going to go to London and I'm going to have Indian food, where do I go?
Oh my God. I've got so many recommendations for you. Yeah. Because I'll have to email you because I have to think about it. I have to consult my husband, who's mixed race and half Indian. So like we are very into all of that. So I can definitely recommend some places. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you'd be there aren't that many, to be honest, which is a bit surprising and disappointing.
Yeah. Well, more than in the States and definitely in this small town that I live in where there is zero delicious Indian food. But you saw that I like Indian food from our Instagram.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
It's my favorite. Okay, now Zach, you can go. Now you can ask.
Ted Lasso.
I can talk about Ted Lasso.
Okay, first of all, do you have feelings about Ted Lasso or do you just live in Richmond?
Oh no, I didn't follow Ted Lasso here. No.
Okay.
I mean Richmond is stunning. It's one of the most gorgeous places to live in. I'm very, very fortunate to live here. My feeling on Ted Lasso is I really loved the first 2 series and I haven't even watched the second. So I don't even
Ted Lasso.
I
have very strong feelings about Ted Lasso and I'm gonna tell you what they are very quickly.
I had a feeling you might.
And then we're going to talk about the thing that you're good at, which is something that Laura and I are not good at. Rebecca is my actual wife. So sometimes I say her name, which is this whole expertise around attachment styles, which I'm actually fascinated to learn about. But first, let me tell you about Ted Lasso. Number one, I think season one, you call them series. Series one was amazing. Yeah. It was important. It needed to exist. It came into the world at the exact right time and it was amazing. And I love it. And I love every minute of it. I think season two is absolute garbage. I think it's terrible. I hated it. I hated every second and I wish it didn't exist. And I never watched season three. So that is my very strong feelings about Ted Lasso. And if you asked me questions, I would talk about it for another half an hour. But since that's not what we're here for, I'm just going to leave it at that and otherwise come visit Richmond and appreciate how beautiful it is.
I think we are in alignment on our opinions there, Zach. So yes, I agree with you.
I love it because you didn't watch season three. I love people who haven't watched season three. I think they did the right thing.
And I watch everything. So that's really saying something.
Wow. Okay.
Whoa.
What are you watching right now?
Oh
my God. Well, I have all this sort of woman stuff, right, Laura, that I watch like on my own. And then there's stuff that I watch with my husband. And then there's stuff that I watch with my son.
What is the women's stuff?
Oh my God.
What's the trashy television?
Do you watch Grey's Anatomy?
I used to back in the day when it was sort of new. I used to love that. Do you know what I miss? I wish my life had that sort of voiceover and summary at the end of every day or week or something that was sort of half philosophy, half kind of whatever. That's how I feel like I live my life with this constant sort of background sort of thing happening and everything has far too much meaning and stuff. But that's life of a therapist, right?
Sure. Okay. Serious question about that, though. Serious question about that. Do you know who Alain de Botton is?
I do know Alain. Yes. Alain de Botton.
Yeah. Alain de Botton. He wrote the book. It's called The Course of Love, and it's about this couple. Who I think they live in London and they're trying to figure out how to do life, and they meet and they get married and they have kids. I think one of them has an affair. They go to therapy, and he writes the novel in plain old, like Romans, times New Roman text. But then he philosophizes he meta appreciates the story about every third paragraph with this whole italics thing, where he's like reflecting on what's really going on here and what is the deal. I love that book. I recommend it to couples all the time. And there's an entire section in there about attachment, about how attachment works and how they are kind of fleshing it out through their own narrative. But then he kind of goes textbook on it almost. So this, now we're teed up. Now here we are. We're at your doorstep, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Absolutely. Thank you, Alain de Botton.
I mean, the guy is genius. Like I can't even quite wrap my brain around how his brain works. He's one of our dream interviews, but we can't even find him. He's like, nah, I'm not done. I'm not going to talk to you. You know, he's just happy doing what he's doing.
Hey gang, it's me here to remind you again that if you're not using Rocket Money, you're doing it wrong. Did you know that about 75% of people have subscriptions they forgot about? Before I started using Rocket Money, I thought I had about, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12. But turns out I had a lot more. I couldn't believe it when they showed me I was paying for extra subscriptions every month. Between a couple of streaming services and some fitness apps, there was a couple food delivery services. And thanks to Rocket Money, I'm no longer wasting money on the ones I forgot about. We've been using Rocket Money for a while. We use it in our house, and also my daughter uses it in college. She's trying to save money and trying to stay on top of it. She feels super busy, but they have a dashboard that actually shows her month's spending compared to last month, and she can see her habits. And they helped her create a custom budget, so she keeps track and spends on top of it, keep things on track. We've tried a handful of these finance apps for her, and this was the one that worked the best. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to about $740 a year when they use all of the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions and get your budget under control by going to rocketmoney.com/MTR. Like I said, it's an app that you can download on your phone, but it's best for us if you use the website. That's rocketmoney.com/MTR. rocketmoney.com/MTR.
Prior to you coming on, Charisse, we were talking about how I asked Zach, I said, do you use attachment in your work with couples? And he said, not really. And we're both couples therapists. And I said, I would love to understand what to do with couples, because what happens is, I can oftentimes chat with folks and say, okay, I can maybe diagnose, right? I can say, this seems like this is your attachment style. And that's as far as it goes. Once you identify an attachment style, then what do you do? So that's what I'm really interested in understanding, is like, what can you do to actually work within that framework once you've identified what your attachment style is? But before we do that, I think it would be helpful to understand what attachment styles are in the first place, and how people, if they're listening, might be able to categorize themselves if they can even self-diagnose. So if you can just take the ball with that, I would love for you to talk a little bit more.
Absolutely. Let me give a little summary of attachment and the different attachment styles. And then let's talk about what does that look like in practice, in therapy or in relationship when you're with people, because it's a dynamic, isn't it? It's when we're working with people and each other and in relationship with others that this becomes so complicated, but it's also really illuminating and helpful.
I'm all about it. Let's see what you got.
I remember, I can't remember if it was in a previous podcast or something else that just a recording that you were doing, but I think Zach was talking about really beautifully saying something like, if you're in a relationship, can you be in a relationship without history? How do you lose your history? How do you not have history? And you were talking about that's impossible, right? We all have our history. And that's what attachment ultimately is. It's what we've learned love to mean. The attachments that we had when we were growing up informs our very definition, our very understanding of love. So we're taught what love is. We are, we are shown by the way our caregivers relate to us and the way our caregivers relate to each other. And we learn that and we imprint that. And that becomes our blueprint for how we're going to relate to others.
Okay. Did you say attachment is what we've learned love to mean? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
All right. I can wrap my head around that. Attachment style is a reflection of what we've learned love to mean. Okay.
So and let's you were imagine starting to talk about all,
styles. Yeah.
So we're young. And when we're young, what we get is what we get, right? The parenting we received, the environment we were in, that was it. And that's love. And so if what we received was a little bit neglectful, a little bit critical, or super great and affirming and kind and consistent, that is the teaching. That is what we're learning love is. So let's imagine we do experience a bit of neglect growing up. We will imprint that love when we're in a love relationship with someone, we will experience that as somewhat neglectful. We will grow up. And neglect is going to be familiar to us in a love relationship. So we will seek out people potentially that may neglect us. And the way we experience relationships will be tinged with neglect or feeling neglected, which will really inform then how we are relating to the people that we're with.
It's not that we seek out neglect. It's that we seek out familiarity.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Probably unconsciously.
Another clarifier in that in the relationships that we're in, you said it's tinged. Does that mean that maybe we see neglect where neglect isn't actually there, but that's the script that we're using to sort of tell ourselves the story that this person's being neglectful, even if they may not actually be neglectful?
I think so. And this is where it's really useful when we are working with people or in our own relationships. Is that I think becoming securely attached means working on two things. It's choosing people who can kind of meet us or at least grow with us or have awareness with us and can move forward with us. And it's about recognizing that the lens through which we see the world and we see each other and we see relationships is a bit traumatized. We're coming from wounding, we're coming from upsets. And therefore, we will interpret things a certain way. And so if someone doesn't respond to our text message fast enough, or if someone looks away while we're talking to them, because we are imprinted with an expectation of neglect, we will interpret these things as neglectful. Some of which will be neglectful, but many are not. But we will project what we expect, and that's what we will then create for ourselves.
Perfect. Great explanation. What is the, there's certain labels or titles that, but if you grew up with neglect, what is the framework that you would kind of label that as?
I think if we have a very quite serious neglect on its own, I mean, this is one of the things I sort of talk about in the book, which is there's a crossover of attachment styles. We can be historically quite rigid. Oh, I'm anxiously attached. Oh, I'm avoidantly attached. Or more often than not, they're avoidantly attached, you know, and it's quite rigid. Whereas I think actually it's much more fluid than we realize. We are responding all the time. But if we do come from a neglectful childhood, if we're told to stop crying, if we're told to, you know, we're not taught to speak up and we're dismissed or, you know, we are criticized for having feelings, that is the origin of more of an avoidant attachment, where we learn to avoid our emotions and in turn we avoid people and their messy emotions too. And in extreme, if we add neglect to trauma and dysfunction and quite serious, chaotic, you know, households with mental health issues or addiction issues, that's when we can have fearful avoidant attachment, which is used to be known as disorganized attachment, which again sort of starves us of feelings of safety, feelings of security. And so we become avoidant in our relationships as a way of staying safe. We avoid closeness. We avoid intimacy in our adulthood.
So how would that look if I was in a relationship and I was thinking, gosh, I wonder if my partner is avoidantly attached? How might I experience that person in a relationship?
Avoidantly attached people typically are quite emotionally detached, kind of quite shut down. In the book, I talk about this kind of overly rational. And I'm sure you'll see in your practices, there's often one person in a relationship that's kind of heightened emotionally. And then there's another person that seems to become more and more rational, the more emotional one of them gets, right? And that is a typical avoidant response, is that we intellectualize life, we rationalize life. And it's quite a powerful place to be. It's quite a desirable place to be, you know, because we feel in control. There's this perception of control. I'm really in control. This other person who's really emotional is not in control, right? So I often say it's the avoidant process often isn't one that we're too readily want to let go of, because it feels a bit bulletproof. We like it. It can feel quite safe. It gives us, that's how we've kept ourselves safe. But then it gets in the way of intimacy, of enjoyable sex, of understanding what's going on. And we can often get this sort of sense of emptiness within ourselves, because we're not really connected to ourself or our emotions. So in relationship, this is when you can't get through to someone. There's this wall, they stonewall, they step back, they need space, they don't want to detach, calm down, enough with your messy emotions. There's this real disconnect then.
Yeah. Okay, so we went through avoidant attachment. What are some of the other attachment styles?
Well, attachment styles broadly falls into two categories, secure and insecure. Insecure, of course, is happy, healthy, satisfied in relationships. We feel worthy of love. We feel we deserve support and kindness, so we'll welcome that. We go to our partners for help and support. They come to us for help and support, and it's kind of okay. There's a general safety within our relationships. And then the insecure attachment, there's avoidant attachment and anxious attachment. So we've spoken about the avoidant. One is known as dismissive avoidant, where we're quite offhand, we can put people down as a way of maintaining safety, dismissive, can be quite cruel in extreme. And then there's a fearful avoidant, also known as a disorganized, where we're actually quite high emotion, high avoidance. So there's a lot going on there. It's a very tricky one. I think a lot more people actually are fearful of avoidant than we originally thought. And then in the anxious category, well, in the other insecure category, there's anxious attachment. And that's sort of different to the avoidant attachment, which is overly rational. The anxious attachment, when under stress, can be emotional. We can be preoccupied with the relationships. We become very preoccupied with relationships. What's wrong? How the other person needs to change? How we're not getting our needs met? How we need to work? You know, they're often the ones that are coming to therapy, wanting things to change, wanting to work on things. This is when, you know, maybe stuff like codependency, people pleasing, that kind of stuff lives in anxiety. There's a lot going on when we're anxiously attached. It's busy, busy, busy. When we're avoidant, nothing's going on. You know, we're pursuing our career, we're playing sports, we're into fitness, we've got other projects. You know, relationships are a tiny, tiny part of our existence that isn't super important.
Is there a differentiation that needs to be made between people who are listening to this and saying, I am an anxious person, I struggle with anxiety, and I'm anxiously attached? Because I can already see people thinking, I've been on anti-anxiety meds my whole life. Am I anxiously attached? This doesn't seem to relate. Can you be one and not the other?
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess
that is a great question. I like that question a lot.
Yeah, that is a good question, because it's very easy to just go, oh, yes, of course. Yeah. But I think we could all just look at our favorite coping strategies. You know, we can think, okay, well, what do we like? Do we like, you know, going away on our own and feeling anxious on our own and worrying and blocking people out? Or do we like going to people and wanting reassurance and wanting soothing and talking things out a lot? So I think anxiety doesn't automatically equal anxious attachment. It's more about what feels more comfortable for you within your anxiety. Is it to shut down, or is it to really open yourself up and seek out connection? Because those are two different processes.
I feel like for me, I'm listening to you talk and I'm sort of like, well, I don't know which one I am, because It depends on what room I'm in and who I'm talking to and what mood I'm in, whether or not I've had a sandwich lately and what, you know, like, so if I'm not clear, or if I'm pretty good at being avoidant sometimes and attached, or sort of anxious at other times, what am I? Am I okay?
Yeah, of course you're okay. You're human and you're having human reactions. So it's more about, let's find out what the various traits are. And actually my favorite chapters in my book are the traits. And I've written pages and pages of traits and what those look like in relationship, in the world, how you are within yourself. Because I think there's a lot of stuff that is invisible that we don't realize. Okay, hold on, I'm being avoidant here, or my anxiety is in charge, or whatever it might be. But because, yes, you're right, I can go to a party and speak to someone and feel very securely attached talking to someone I know, I feel calm with, I'm safe with. My nervous system is like, oh, this is a great friend of mine, I love them, let's have a chat. And then this other person comes along that I don't know as well, and they are super intimidating and kind of a bit strange, and I don't know where I stand. I'm going to feel a bit of anxiety coming up. And then this annoying other person's going to come up and who I don't like and find them really tedious, and they just, you know, ask too many questions, and I'm going to feel like a bit like, oh no, and I'm going to be avoidant. So it's kind of, it's changing all the time depending on how safe we feel, how stressed we feel. Yes, whether we've had a sandwich or not, you know, all of that does matter because it's a physiological response to how safe am I in this environment, in this relationship, in this interaction. And as animals, we're kind of constantly looking to that all the time. How safe am I? Is this a good person? Is this person going to meet my needs? Are they interested in me? Are they, you know, wanting to get away from me? We're sensing that all the time, and we'll be responding to those cues.
I'm thinking, Zach, about like some of the relationships. I would say that I'm very securely attached to my husband. I think Zach can attest that. He has seen the two of us be,
it's pretty creepy, actually,
you know, with one another. But congrats. I was 100%. Yeah, thank you. I was what people would call the psycho ex-girlfriend in a lot of instances, and in that I was very anxiously attached in college when I was dating. And I kind of think about these traits like, well, isn't it like a personality trait? Isn't it sort of baked in? Because I experience myself as being securely attached now in my 40s, but I certainly wasn't at 21. So how did I have that evolution and shift with these two different people?
Wow. Well, that's amazing. Well, I mean, if I were to stab at a guess, I would imagine that you probably were in enough pain during all of these experiences that you describe, that you did evolve and mature into something that allowed you to make different choices for yourself and to value certain things. Because, yes, I think we can all value. I think that's the tragedy of attachment, is if we've experienced this growing up, if we've experienced this in our previous relationships, it can become entrenched and it can just become the story of our life. And that's that. And I'm sure we can all see in our practices and in our lives, people who are just kind of doing the same old patterns with the same people or different people over and over. Right. And that's because our attachment system isn't maturing. We're not learning away from what's not great for us, having the awareness of, okay, that's not going to meet my needs. That's not esteeming. That's not going to give me the life that I want. And we learn. So for example, I'm very similar, Laura. It's kind of what I found attractive in my 20s is literally repellent to me now. And I can spot them in a room and I can say, I know exactly how that story starts, goes, and ends. I know exactly that. And I no longer find it attractive. But find me some kind of cuddly, cute, dependable, flirty, kind of easy guy, wow, that's attractive to me. That is attractive. Yeah. So that's, there is evolution. And that's why I feel there's such hope for people who can wake up into what they're doing, because it is very unconscious, all of this. So we need huge awareness of, this is what I automatically want to do right now. That's not actually helpful. So this whole like, listen to your heart, listen to your gut instinct, all that kind of stuff, not apply here. This is kind of, no, we can make decisions uh-huh. that are in line with our values, our goals, what we want, our self-esteem, because what our instinct might be telling us is to go for that kind of, you know, not good sort of situation because it's familiar, not because it's healthy. Yeah. So, uh-huh. yeah. Mm.
Okay.
But it's a starting point. It's an orientation. And if you know where you're starting, then you have options in terms of whether or not you choose to move left or right from that space. You know, like you can sort of recognize that my impulse is this. Okay. Yeah. What else is available to me? Is that the work of like maybe moving towards secure attachment?
Definitely. That's why I think such a key part of it is emotional regulation, as we tolerate the discomfort sure. of yep. not acting out on those immediate mm-hmm. chemistry, mm-hmm. trauma bonds, mm-hmm. call it what you will, to ride that wave out and give someone else mm-hmm. a chance over months mm-hmm. to discover something mm-hmm. else that could be love and a more, you know, accurate Ooh. Definition of love needs our nervous system needs a lot of calming and soothing to get us there, because we probably want to get out or, you know, get anxious and get hooked in. So to just regulate and regulate is key.
I'm going to spend a lot of time thinking about this, because you just said something that, that kind of blew my mind. When I think about dysregulation and when I think about moving out of the kind of the fight or flight thing, I'm thinking about like in the moment, in the afternoon, in the kitchen. You just said over months. This is okay. Help me wrap my head around, like, how do I do that? Cause I know how to get people or how to help people. I even know how to help myself get out of the emotional moment in a moment, but you just said months. What the heck are you talking about?
Well, I mean, the beginning part of a relationship is pretty heady stuff a lot of the time anyway, isn't it? It is literally intoxicating. And for those of us within an insecure attachment, there is so much more going on. Hmm. So for us to kind of moderate that so we can be making choices and not get swept away or not create these fantasy narratives in our heads about what it's going to be like. Every WhatsApp message, every date, every time you think about them, it's going to put something into your nervous system. It's going to be reacting and responding, isn't it? It's constant. And with my anxious clients, I say to them, it's like an endurance test, because it is weeks and months of really tolerating someone, having boundaries, communicating calmly and not sending 40 messages, just sending 3. You know, it's the new behavior that we have to do in our relationships to be healthier, to be appropriate, and to set a better foundation for something that can actually evolve and grow. And that takes months. And the nervous system is constantly, in a way, begging to be loved, wanting to feel
right
so
now,
much.
Right we now, right activated. This second. You got to love me right now, right this second, in the That's way that right. I want to be loved, or else I'm going to freak out.
Yeah.
It's got to be so hard to date right now in this environment.
Wow.
For a couple
that's
reasons.
Right.
I mean, first of all, I never dated anybody. Like I met Rebecca right after I graduated from college, and we were married within a year and a half. And that was in 1995, 6, 7, something. So like all this like technology dating and all this like stuff is totally unfamiliar to me, but you've got this platform that's literally built on urgency. I'm going to swipe right. I might talk to you tonight, and I'm going to text you. And I hope if you don't text me back, and it's not built on months of building commerce. So it's got to be so hard to stay in the stuff. And is this a thing? Like, are all the good people taken? Like, are all the securely attached people, do they like go off the radar in their 20s? Or is it just the anxious and the avoidance that are left in their 30s and 40s and 50s trying to date? I don't know. I don't want to be presumptuous.
This reminds me of Logan Urie's book, How to Not Die Alone.
Yeah.
And she's, I think kind of what she was sort of the assumption of, and now you're out in the dating pool. And if this is like, you know, you're divorced and you're re-entering, is everybody else out there just anxiously attached? And you're just all the avoidant and the anxiously attached are finding each other. Good question, Zach.
Yeah.
I don't know if I asked a question. I'm just like kind of in awe of this idea that, we, mm-hmm. we definitely, and my kid, I'm watching my kids are like my, we're definitely living in a world of immediate feedback of every type. And if I don't get what I want, I'm going to go to another app on my phone and get it mm-hmm. versus I'm going to stay in this for months mm-hmm. and I'm going to work this out and I'm going to feel uncomfortable for months. Yeah. Sorry. I'm like, I get it as an adult, but I guess.
And then imagine you have a bit of avoidance. And so your first, you know, reaction in avoidance is, oh, well, this is uncomfortable or this is not enjoyable. So I'm out. Bye.
Yeah.
And I mean, talking about the apps and the world today and the grass is always greener and there are 50 million other options, apparently. But what that has also created, and we know this in therapy, you know, the biggest, hugest catastrophes for us as humans is to be abandoned or to be rejected. Mm-hmm. And that's what people experience every single day on the apps. So people who may not have been anxious are certainly anxious now, or they're shut down now, or they're angry now, or they're bitter now. And it's like, wow, we're going to try to create intimacy from this half defensive, half angry, half like broken place. It's really, really tragic that it is so much harder. And then the effort it takes to get to know someone and to be vulnerable with them and be curious about them in this very me world too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I think that's what's really, really interesting here is that the idea of relationship is changing so dramatically now. And this idea of meeting someone who you want to, you know, get to know and give it a go with is sort of over. It's now either you give me everything I want right now or you aren't the right person for me, you know. Bless you on your journey. Mm. I will wait until I find someone that is my perfect person. And there are a lot of people waiting and waiting and waiting, as you say.
Hmm.
So how do you practically help them?
Like, how do you practically offer them some guidance or direction? Like, what is your practice? What is your book? What is your philosophy provide for people to navigate this space?
Well, something that I'm very, very big on, and maybe not many people are, but I'm really big on accountability. And so because we're in pain now, we're in so much pain in our relationships because we're becoming more and more de-skilled with these expectations that we have mm-hmm. and, you know, often not coming from great role modeling either. So there is this need for a collective education into mm-hmm. what it actually means to have relationship, and that love is something that's demonstrated and quite practical in how we do it in our lives when we choose to love people. So the book, in a way, is about saying, do any of these things sound familiar to you? These anxious processes, these avoidant processes, these ways of behaving, do any of these sound familiar to you? Because the chances are these are your patterns, and we need to be accountable for doing the behaviors and having the, and, you know, nurturing the cognitions that are maintaining those patterns. Because just ending that relationship and going on to someone else isn't actually going to yield any kind of a different result if we're not examining what we are doing, how we are behaving, how we're conducting ourselves, our belief systems, and so on. So there is something so exciting about really empowering ourselves with a new way of approaching relationships that that defies the odds in a way. And all we need is awareness to really do that successfully.
You blew Zach's mind. You just blew mine, which is this idea that now I think I'm going to start asking my clients this question, which is, how have you been maintaining your, I don't know what kind of behaviors you want to say it or call it out, like, I don't know, dysfunctional behaviors, but how have you been maintaining these behaviors that are not helpful, unhelpful behaviors? How about that? Call that. But I like that awareness and asking that question and having them take accountability of that to be able to differentiate. These are the things that feel familiar to me. This is the easy route. This is the automatic response. Yes. And this is how I can maintain that script And here's the choices that I've made in order to, you know, get myself into, I guess you have to create new neurological connections or you have to like rewire your nervous system. But, oh, that's a good question. How, okay, so once you have awareness, sorry, welcome to my ADHD brain. I never finish a sentence. Once you have awareness, then what do you do? How do you teach folks to choose a different behavior that is creating more of a secure connection with another person?
Well, yes, the first step is the awareness. And then absolutely, then what? Then we've got to recognize what stops me from doing new behavior. And this is where the emotional regulation comes in, because if there's anything we are as a society now, it's reactive. You know, we just speak without thinking, we behave and do whatever we damn well please. And, you know, and we're having feelings and we're just expressing ourselves, right? And that is kind of the opposite of what a sort of thoughtful, kind, helpful way of behaving would be. And I like to think about it as literally embodying love. And I will rarely challenge my partners. And they'll say, well, I did this because I was angry and because I was this and I felt that and I felt upset and, you know, this and that. And I'll say, okay, so you got that out of your system. And then where was your love? Where did your love go? Or what does love look like now in doing something different? And I think for a lot of people, certainly for me, When kids come into your life, there's a kind of a major change about love and what love actually is, because love is so patient. Love is so gentle with someone else who is fragile, and we're all fragile. And, you know, we can't just be explosive because we feel like it. Somehow we have that understanding when we've got little people in the room. We don't have that understanding when we've got big people in the room.
Right.
So, yes, yeah, so the book is called The Attachment Solution because it talks about now what is the solution to our insecure ways of relating. And so we need to emotionally regulate. We need to challenge our distorted thinking because, as you said earlier, Laura, you know, we've got to rewire our brains. We've got to rewire our attachment systems. And some of our thinking is actually more like assuming. And some of our belief systems are more based on trauma and fear than optimism and love. And so we need to get really, really clear on that and take responsibility for that and reframe the way we look at things, the assumptions that we make. And then we need to go on and have boundaries in our relationships, often boundaries for ourselves. Like, I will not allow myself to get this heated. I will not allow
my react in this way.
Volume to get this high. I will not, you know, disagreements cannot last more than 15 minutes, not 5 days, whatever. You know, we can begin to start behaving like adults who care about each other and ourselves and take responsibility for the atmosphere that we're creating. And I've got loads of exercises and tips and things to be getting on with in that, because it takes a lot of effort. And I always say that love is an effort. It's not this thing that we hope we feel. It is a very, very deep, determined, committed decision and an effort. And if you're not putting in any effort, chances are you probably don't have a super stimulating relationship. It takes effort. And the more effort you put in, the calmer and happier and sexier that relationship probably is.
That really is kind of counter to what I think a lot of folks are assuming, is that when I find a relationship where it feels easy to me, that's the relationship for me. But I hear you saying it's not about swapping out your partner. It's about being able to put the effort into yourself to be able to shift the way in which you experience love or learn love with another person. Now I'm like super intrigued. Where do I find your book? Where if we're looking for it, has it been released? Is it accessible as an ebook?
It isn't accessible as an ebook, but that's something that I could definitely look into. But it's available. I had my US launch last week, actually. And it's available in the US and Canada, but it's also internationally. It's in England and I think later in the year, France and Thailand, bizarrely. But yeah, so it is available. It's called the Attachment Solution. And that's really why I kind of wrote it, was to really offer genuine solutions to people. Because as we all know, there's a lot about the problem and there isn't always a lot about the solution. And that's what I'm all about. It's really about, okay, let's really focus on what matters here. And you need to be doing stuff. It's not just, oh, well, that's the other thing. We can't use our attachment styles as an excuse. Oh, well, of course I'm going to shut down. I'm avoided. Like, okay, no, that's not quite how it works.
Yeah. So, okay, the attachment solution, is that something that folks can find like on your website, is on Amazon, local bookstores?
Yeah, I think it is available at local bookstores. It's certainly available on Amazon. And on my Instagram, there's a link in my bio, and then it finds wherever you are in the world, and then it'll just show you all the different places that the book is available. But it's definitely available for purchase online.
I love it.
Awesome. What is your Instagram in case we wanted to cyber stalk you?
Thank you so much. Yeah, please do. My Instagram is at Charisse Cook. I try to post every single day with really bossy, you know, bits of guidance and tips and making sure that we're all kind of really trying our best in our relationships. I think we all need daily reminders, let's face it.
Yeah. Charisse Cook is spelled CharisseCooke, correct?
That's correct.
Charisse Cook, if you are on the Instagram. Awesome.
Yeah.
Any last questions, Zach, that you have for Charisse?
No, I'm excited about it. Congratulations on the book. I'm looking forward to reading it. And yeah, I'm really glad to have talked to you. I have a couple of things that I'm going to be thinking about a lot for a while. So I'm glad that we got to do this.
Oh, amazing. Yes. Thank you. Well, thank you for being so interested and so engaging.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Marriage Therapy Radio. Thank you to our guest, Charisse Cook. She said the best way to get a hold of her is on Instagram at Charisse Cook. And check out her book. It is released. It's The Attachment Solution. You can also find that on Instagram or your local bookstore, Amazon, anywhere you buy books. As a reminder as well, we have our spring intensive. It's coming up on May 17th and 18th, and you can register online at marriagetherapyradio.com. Thanks for all of your time and attention, making your relationship better today than it was yesterday.